Torch Trust, Sight Loss 101, in conversation with Julia Chapman.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Sight Loss 101, a podcast series where I, Tim Jeffrey, talk to people who have experienced sight loss, who are blind, to help me to understand, as a sighted person, what's it like to live in their world. Today I have the great pleasure of having Julia Chapman with me. Julia is a trustee of Torch, and I'm really looking forward to hearing a bit more about her story. So hello Julia, welcome.
Hi Tim, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a real joy, thank you for agreeing to do this, be my next victim. Would you start by just kind of giving us a brief kind of sketch of your life, and particularly how sight loss has begun to feature in that?
So to give some background on my sight loss journey, I'm registered as partially sighted, so I do have a full field of vision. Okay. However, it is blurred. The condition I have is called retinal dystrophy, which means that the cells at the back of my eye are gradually dying sooner than you would expect them to. Right. Mm-hmm. And it is a condition that will gradually get worse. Okay. The good news is when I was diagnosed with it about 10 years ago, it was considered a mild to moderate condition. And although there are no guarantees, the hope is that I will remain to have some vision in the future. The other good news was that it has come to me later on in life. So unlike other people whose sight loss journey has been quite a few people that we've heard of since birth, mine came later in life, in middle age, was when I started to have issues with my eyesight. Now that brings a lot of benefits in terms of I still have relatively okay vision. I describe it to people more as though it's like when you wake up in the morning with sleep in your eyes.
Yeah.
Normally you rub your eyes and the sleep goes away and your eyes clear. Mine does a little bit, but it doesn't clear that well. And there's a couple of areas where I have specific difficulties with, some with light and dark, recognizing people, which can be an interesting thing when you pass your own mother in the street and you don't recognize her, and also reading. That was the key thing that came to me, was that has impacted the journey most, is the ability to read. I guess for those of you who've ever seen Russian written on a piece of paper, that's what English was looking like to me out of one eye, in that I could see some of the markings round of the letters, but not all of it. And the reason for that being, if you think the cells in your retina take the message of what you are seeing to your brain, as I've got less and less of the back of my eye, almost like a sieve. So you don't see the full complete picture. And whilst your eyes can scan very much backwards and forwards and compensate a lot, as things are progressing, obviously there's less and less they can compensate on that. So first of all, I found that I had the issue in one eye in terms of not being able to read, and then it went to the other eye. But that was during... when I was saying middle age that came. So up until that, as far as I was concerned, I didn't have issues with my eyes. I didn't even really wear glasses for most of the time up until that point. It is a genetic condition. We've done some research into the family as much as we can, and can't see where it's come from, however. My mother was adopted, so we can't go back too far that side. There's a lot of research going on in the area, which I didn't know, obviously, until I became included in it myself. I think the first time was when I went to Oxford Eye Hospital for some tests, and which ended up taking all day because one of the machines had broken and the place was crowded. And I said to somebody, is everyone having eye tests for different things? And they were like, no, all the people here are tests for issues to do with their retina. And so the sheer scope of it kind of hit me then a little bit. And also the fact that they said, although my condition is retinal dystrophy and it's under that umbrella, there's thousands of different conditions within that. And they're still doing so much research on it at the moment, ultimately with the aim that in the future they may be able to come up with ways that they can stop those cells from dying too early or inject some kind of genetic breakthroughs to get them to regrow.
Oh, really?
Again.
Right.
So it's encouraging that there's a lot of research going on. Obviously, you always like it to be quicker than it is, a bit like the vaccine we've got at the moment for the virus. But it's encouraging that there is research going on there, especially for future as well, for other people who may come into contact with this.
Yeah. So, Julia, how did this change interrupt your life? What impact has it had? What was your sort of career trajectory? What was happening? How's this changed your life?
Quite significantly, I would say. You never quite know what's coming round the corner. I went to took a very academic route at school, went to university, went to Bath University to study finance and accounting. Then I qualified as an auditor, and then after that moved into practice with a well-known software company and did various routes in there for 10 to 15 years in financial management, the last one being supporting the leadership team for their services organization of several hundred people. So it was very much very career focused, very much in terms of that, assumed that was where I needed to be. And to then suddenly be told that you've got issues with your sight, but also knowing before you're told that you have issues with your sight anyway, and not really knowing what they're related to, can be tricky, because I hadn't changed. My thought process hadn't changed. And a lot of my role was very much talking to people and liaising with different groups. It was doing that with the financials fundamentals underneath. And whilst I hadn't changed, it was taking me longer to do things. And also I was relying on my memory a huge amount. And thankfully I did used to have a photographic memory. It's decreased recently, but that's one of the things I've learned, that having a good memory or having familiarity of when you do have sight loss is a really good help, because you tend to remember where things are when you don't realize quite how much, but you're using your memory versus your eyesight. And so I would go into meetings and I would know the numbers and be able to talk about them. And so for a long time, people didn't know about my sight loss, because it was something that was like, well, you know, I'm coping with it. I'm still delivering on that basis. And I guess when you're on the sight loss journey, in terms of losing your sight loss, going from perfect vision, mine was pretty close to perfect, down to less, it's kind of a secret journey. And it's to a certain extent, till it gets to a point when it no longer is secret. And I would say I had some other challenges at work from a manager who wasn't just having issues with myself, he was having issues with the rest of his team, and ultimately ended up leaving, which was good. However, at the time, having those challenges meant that I didn't feel I could raise my sight loss challenges. Being in a corporate environment, things are very pressurized. You don't have many people there to perform the roles you are doing. And so I felt exposed that I had to keep things to myself. And so it was a very difficult time for sure. Certain things in terms of that helped me was when somebody first said, well, have you used Narrator, which is a software tool for speaking out on the computer? And I probably said that probably extended my working life by a couple of years.
Okay.
Because, you know, instead of, you know, once I couldn't get to see things on the screen, to have them read out to you, it's a huge, huge breakthrough, I think.
Yeah.
And so that was great from a working perspective. And I think since then, some of the technology that's around, certainly, I think, had I come to the sight loss journey 10 years earlier than I did, things would have been very different.
Yeah.
So on the whole, it certainly impacted my working life, and things were quite difficult for a while. And it's one of the difficult conversations to have, to tell your manager that you're losing your sight and you don't really know what the outcome's going to be, and it's completely new to them as well.
Yeah. And were they good as an employer in the way that they engaged with that when you were finally felt able to say something?
On the whole, the outcome was good, yes. But I would say there was some very difficult parts in the middle, that because my confidence had been at an all-time low level, purely because of this managed issue I'd had with the manager in the past. And so I was in a difficult position whereby, if your confidence is low, to then try and give people excuses that can be used is difficult. But you get to the point whereby, you know, you just have to.
Yeah.
And ultimately, through a lot of different discussions backwards and forwards, including getting some advice externally as well, thankfully, the company I worked for were very keen, and still are, on protecting employees and protecting their reputation, but very much in terms of had a suite of benefits that they wanted people to take out. And to cut a long story short, one of them was by, if you ever you had to stop working or couldn't do your current job due to an illness. And we thought it was a long shot, but ultimately, I got approved onto the scheme.
Okay.
So it meant that I could have continued working part-time or going to do a less senior role, but because the number of finance roles are so limited anyway, we took the decision that it was probably better for me to stop altogether if the insurance company would accept me, and they did.
Right.
So it was very much
from the time when you kind of first realized that something was going wrong with your sight till then you actually were able to take that to stop work.
It was about 5 years, so it was a long time.
Yeah.
But throughout that, I would say that my eyesight deteriorated through that. It was 5 years of kind of struggling a bit to realizing that I couldn't read emails and things without software help from that. And so I very much saw it as an opportunity to do something else. You know, I've been given this opportunity that other people haven't had, which has turned a real negative into a positive, because I live by myself, so I started having all the, as well as the work position, you have all the anxieties going through, well, how am I going to support myself?
Yeah.
You know, we all know, however much people talk about benefits and things, that they're not great. They're not that much. You've got a mortgage that, you know, I've been paying every month. And so from that basis, you start to think, well, you know, how am I going to What happens if I'm going to need long-term care? What happens if the worst-case scenario happens? And I can remember going through a lot of emotions at that time as well. And, even so much, one memory I've got is sat outside in my parents' garden and just literally shivering just at the thought of what was happening. And so you are almost going through, I would say, a grieving process without, I don't mean to be melodramatic, and for those people who are grieving, losing people, that's obviously, 10 times worse. But it's almost as though it's something you have had, and I'm fiercely independent as I do live by myself. And so it's going from the fact that there's certain things that you need to ask for help for, and that it's acceptable to do that, whilst also not wanting to, stand up and shout, "Hey, everyone, I've got sight loss issues," because again, it's a very, unless you carry a cane or you don't have hardly any sight or you've got a guide dog, it is actually a very quite an easy thing to hide if you want to hide it.
And Julia, how has this affected your faith, or how has your faith helped you through it? What's been the sense of your sort of spiritual journey through this sight loss?
I think it's been up and down. And I think the most helpful thing somebody said to me was, "It's okay to be upset about it. It's okay to question why has this happened." That's not wrong in itself. It's part of the acceptance journey that some people have to go through. And I think the acceptance journey that you have is different for everybody. For me, I guess looking back, and hindsight's always a good thing, when you look back, you can think, for me, it's very important that, you had empathy. So if I was talking to somebody new, they were like, "Oh, I hear, you're having a few issues. Sorry to hear that." Now, it was just that acknowledgement was important, because that in itself gave me some kind of strength and reassurance to move forward. Whereas the part that didn't help is, certain people, "Oh, just be positive." This kind of "be positive," just, stiff upper lip, "just be positive," kind of meant that you didn't deal with the true issues. And I think for me, that was very much in my spiritual life. Yes, I did have a lot of questions, more about, well, I've got this to deal with already, and this and this and this, and then you give me something else as well that kind of trumps everything else. And there's still a lot of answers I haven't got to those questions, but I guess over the years I've parked them, and I'm looking forward to having a discussion with God when I get to heaven. Not in terms of to say, "Why did you do this?" but more in terms of, we often hear that he can see kind of the other side of the tapestry that we can't see, and kind of to see, to have the discussion about that. And, "Oh, well, what would you have done here?" or "What would you have advised?" And whilst you try and have that now and through other people guiding you, it's difficult. There's been times when, yes, have been tougher than others. For me, giving up driving was particularly, it was okay at the time, because I guess for the 5 years prior to giving up driving, I didn't used to drive that much because I was always a little bit cautious. And then it got to just driving in the local area and then not at night. So it was kind of a progression to knowing the inevitable was going to happen.
Julia, that's fascinating to hear, and yeah, really tough stuff to deal with. I think you're right about, the grieving. There is a sense in which we have losses in our lives, and it's that things that we have to learn to deal with and engage with. I wonder, as somebody who has lost your sight in sort of middle life and is now partially sighted, your top tip be for me as a sighted person in engaging with you, in talking with people, in leading torch. What's your top tip for me as a sighted person engaging with folk with a growing sense of partial sight?
I think the key thing I would say is that everybody's journey is different. And that's something I've learned myself as well. When you think of, for some people who can't see, you can just see kind of black and white, if that, their day to day will be different than somebody who's partially sighted, who's on that journey. And also somebody who lives alone, their journey will be very different to somebody who has a partner to do a lot of things for them. Or in terms of somebody who has been had their sight issues since birth, to somebody who's excuse me, somebody who develops that later in life. And so I think everybody's journey is different, and I don't think there's a right or wrong way in terms of to help to support that. I guess listen, ask questions, and be led by the person in terms of where they're at. Some people may not want to talk about it and may just want to, move on with practicalities, and that's what their way of coping. Other people talking about it may help. And I think from a, I guess from a torch perspective, I would say as well, is the more we can do that to look at the different people we have amongst our members or clients, and so that we look at the full range of sight loss conditions, I guess, the more we can help people coming in, because I know it's a change in the environment at the moment, that unfortunately a lot more people are coming to sight loss later in life. I think a lot of research prevents some of it happening at birth, but some happens later in life. So you've got people who their sight loss journey will be very different to somebody who's learnt Braille and is going down that route. And I think the support, I definitely think one of the things I regret is that I never had counselling during the time. And I was offered it by the hospital, but it was only genetic counselling, and they just wanted to know the family tree. But had I actually had some counselling to talk that process through, I think it would have been very helpful. And that's why I guess I describe it to kind of, you're, it's a loss, it's a progression.
Bereavement.
And I think in those key areas is for torch to one, acknowledge everyone's different. Try and be inclusive to cater for the different needs in what we're doing. And that's where I think reaching out in terms of technology, we should still absolutely support our key members that we have done, but looking at how we're going to support people who have come to sight loss later in life, who maybe learning Braille isn't an option, or can use Kindle more than they would use large print, or for example, those types of things, I think the better. But I think again, to me, it all goes back to physical contact. It's sometimes people just need people to talk to and to feeling included, and the sight loss journey can be quite an isolating journey. And especially at the moment, what's going on in the world. And so the more we can connect with people and help them to connect with others, the better. And I have to say, when I first started getting involved with Torch, I went to HRC, which down in Sussex, for a sight loss few days. Gordon Temple, who was a CEO at the time, asked me, would I just go and give my views? And I said, yes, that's fine. And I went, and I have to admit, that was very pivotal for me, I think, in my sight loss journey, in accepting the journey I was on, because it gave me a lot of confidence in how where I'd already got to on that journey compared with other people. But it also, through talking to other people, thought, well, I can help other people and they can help me.
Brilliant.
And it was, that's what I think is the special at the heart of Torch. And I think the more we can continue that, it definitely goes to support people who are on whatever their sight loss journey is.
Julia, that's thank you. That's fantastic. And a real reminder of how important community and belonging and engagement and relationships are. Let's hope and pray that the restrictions lift and that we can do some more of that in the coming weeks and months. Julia, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And may you know God's blessing on your ongoing sight loss journey. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us on Sight Loss 101. For more information on Torch, call 01858 438 260.